Welcome to Behind the Curtain, Nashville's Movers, Shakers,
and Tastemakers,
brought to you by Cord Real Estate, your key to the heart of Nashville. I'm Steve Luther alongside my co-host, Van Hoy.
Here we peel back the layers of Nashville's vibrant scene, sitting down with the innovators, creators, and leaders who shape our city. From music to business and everything in between, we dive into the journeys that have brought them to where they are today.
We're here to uncover the stories behind the success, the passion driving their pursuits, and why they've chosen Nashville as their stage. It's about the people who dream big, push boundaries, and make this city truly unique.
So join us as we explore the heart and soul of Nashville through the eyes of those who know it best.
Well, welcome to Behind the Curtain, Nashville's Movers, Shakers, and Tastemakers. Tom Truitt is our guest today. Tom stands out as a pivotal figure in the music and live entertainment industries with a career that spans over three decades. He's currently serving as the managing director and head of the music and live entertainment practice at Turnkey ZRG. Mr. Truitt's experience in executive recruiting is unparalleled. His tenure in Nashville, a city synonymous with music, has seen him recognized as the industry's top talent recruiter, focusing on a wide range of roles from C-level to mid-level positions across various facets of music and live entertainment. With a foundational background that includes founding his own successful search firm, Music Row Search, and creating the influential network event series, Who Knew, which is now the smartest people in the room. Mr. Truitt's contributions to the industry are both profound and diverse. His educational background is equally impressive, with degrees from two of the nation's top institutions, underscoring his deep-rooted knowledge and understanding of the business world.
That's impressive.
Well, I don't know if I can live up to any of that.
I was going
to
say, how's that? I'm sitting here watching you on camera, you know, like just listening about yourself.
Top institutions.
It's impressive.
Pivotal. There's a lot of big words in there. I'm not sure.
Pivotal.
UNC and Vanderbilt, those are two pretty big universities.
That's true.
You know,
two universities my son wanted to go to, well, but didn't even attempt.
I was very lucky. I could not get into Carolina today, I promise you. They would laugh me out of the room.
I love it.
Well, let's kind of dive in here. You you founded Music Row Search. It's the leading entertainment practice. You founded Music Row Search, and then you moved into entertainment practice at Bufkin Baker, and eventually joined Turnkey ZRG. What are some of the pivotal moments in your career that kind of influenced the evolution of your career?
And what is ZRG?
Yeah, it's funny. That doesn't really have any particular significance.
Really?
Yep.
I was like, when I read it, I was like, I don't know what, I want to know what Zerg means.
Yeah.
Turnkey Zerg.
True story. It's kind of a random collection of three letters
that our founder,
you know, handpicked. I didn't have any influence on that decision. But your question's interesting. I don't know how long you all have, but the story really starts about 30 years ago.
Do tell.
Well, what brought me to Nashville was to go to work for the Southwestern Company.
Ah, books.
I spent three miserable summers selling books when I was in college at UNC and learned a whole lot about selling and about character development and everything else. And I was happily single, living in Atlanta as a stockbroker in the mid, late 80s, and Southwestern called.
Wow.
And said, hey, we're launching an executive search firm up here, and we'd like you to come help us launch it. And initially I was like, nope, no thank you. Have no intention of going ever back to Nashville.
Did my time.
Nashville at that time, there wasn't much going on in Nashville at that time.
Yeah.
And as I said, Atlanta was hopping.
Yeah.
Loved Atlanta in the mid 80s. Well,
absolutely.
Southwestern kept after me. And finally I agreed reluctantly to come up here for 6 months in the spring of 1990. I put everything in storage down there and moved here. And as life would have it, 2 weeks later, I met a girl.
Is that right?
We've been married for 32 years.
Congratulations.
My point is, I came here kicking and screaming, never intending to stay.
Yeah.
But I always kid people that I stepped in it and I can't get it off my shoe.
Oh, I love it.
I love this place. And if you like modern Nashville, you'd love mid-80s Atlanta because they're so similar. And that's why I have stayed here and love living here.
Yes.
Anyway, I spent 13 great years helping Southwestern launch that search firm. My practice in those days was mostly management consulting firms and technology companies. This was the first internet boom. Mm-hmm. And there were days in the mid-90s, honestly, where I'd look at my team and go, I can't believe they pay us to do this.
Right.
The supply and demand inequality for what we were doing was so stacked in our favor. It was crazy. But
are you familiar with Southeastern?
Southwestern.
Sorry, well, I said Southeastern. Mm-hmm. Southwestern, are you familiar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a fantastic.
Massive.
It's Nashville's oldest private company.
Yes.
1864.
Like radical, huge mm-hmm. people have come through those doors.
Yeah.
Like in sales and world leader types.
Some great, some not so great. Yesterday, Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House.
Is that right?
He's also an alumnus and unbeknownst to me was at the company yesterday.
My goodness.
Not my cup of tea, but nonetheless.
Hey, you never know.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of tea.
Yeah. Anyway, there are lots and lots of people, especially leaders of the Nashville business community who sold books.
That's right.
I'm in that fraternity.
A lot of pastors too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you're right. Well, religious books were the foundational product
right.
of the company way back when.
I've even bought books for them in the last 10 years from students coming door to door.
Oh, I'm a sucker. When one comes to my door,
I
have to
let them. I'm a sure thing. I'm
give
a
them
sure
lemonade,
thing.
Give them tea, get them, you know, whatever.
Sorry.
Everybody online note that. And, you know, yeah, you still got great. Payne's address.
No, please don't. Because it's there, unfortunately. It's there.
Well, anyway, back to the story. So I spent 13 years there and a myriad of factors came in to play. Number one, the tech bubble burst. Number two, I was managing about 75 people. Mm. And the final thing was, you know, 9/11 hit. I wasn't having any fun at work.
Right.
And I decided I'd had enough. I didn't want to do this anymore. And I had the ability to walk away. I sold my interest in that company. I had a 1-year non-compete that I had to satisfy, and that actually turned into 5 years doing some other interesting different things. And then in 2007, I decided I want to get into the music industry. Hmm. Now, let me be very clear. I have no musical ability whatsoever. I can't write, sing, nor play, but you'll never meet a bigger fan of the creator or the content than me. And in spring of 07, I decided, by golly, I'm going to make my living in this business somehow, some way. So what did I do? I started meeting with well-placed senior music executives in this town, none of which I had ever been in business with, but many that I had met socially. For instance, several of the other parents at my kid's school were in the music industry.
Right.
So I mm-hmm. call them up, say, hey, I'd like to have coffee with you. And yeah, come on in tomorrow, whatever. The very first one of those was a woman named Marianne McCready, who mm-hmm. ran Flood Bumstead McCready McCarthy. And I called her up and said, hey, neighbor, I want to come talk to you about the industry. Yeah, come on in tomorrow, Tom. I'll never forget this. I get in her office and I'm looking around at the walls and it's all just, you know, signed records,
yeah.
and instruments and all the cool trappings of the music industry, right?
Right.
And I was like, well, where's my desk? How am I going to make my living here? And I ask her a kind of pivotal question, and that is, Marianne, who are the go-to headhunters in the music industry? And she looked at me with kind of puzzled look on her face. Tom, I've never heard of that. I don't think that exists. I was like, really? Found that so interesting because every industry has its rock star recruiters, whether
right.
it's real estate
sure.
or crypto or healthcare or
of course.
Whatever. Every industry has, you know, the guy or mm-hmm. the guys, whatever.
Or ladies.
Oh, yeah.
Or there could be ladies.
The people. Anyway, if I was going to find my job, I needed to find that person.
That's
whoever
right.
they are or wherever mm-hmm. they were. And I kept hearing the same thing over and over. Tom, I don't think that exists. I've never heard of that. So in April of 07, I decided I'm going to try to become that person.
Wow.
I launched Music Row Search. Clever name, huh? Here we are on Music
Row. There it is. That's right.
And I rented a little room. And when I say little, I mean about a third of the size of the room we're in. I could almost touch both walls, you know, hands extended. It was in the RCA building on
yeah.
Music Row. And away I went. And here I am. 16 years, 17 years later, still doing what I do. And I am very proud of the fact that I think I have become that guy.
I love it. So. Yeah, I think back in the day, you know, so many people were coming here, you know, wanting to be in the music business. Nobody thought to find a way to narrow it down.
Well, most of the people that come here are chasing the dream of performing.
That's true.
Songwriters, producers, you know, players. Right. I always call Nashville the Olympic Village of music. Mm-hmm. The world's best come here, whether they write, sing, produce, or whatever. But there was no headhunter that could help people land jobs in the music industry.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I still don't have a lot of direct competition. I have some, but most of those firms are more entertainment recruiters who might flirt with the music industry.
Right.
If I'm in a competitive shootout with any of the big firms for a music industry search, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to win it because I've got all these years of relationships and domain expertise that they don't have.
That's right.
So I'm very, very fortunate. And I appreciate if you don't tell anybody because I don't want any more competition.
You hear that, Steve? Don't tell anyone.
I don't know if that's going to happen, but hopefully some people will see it. you know, it's a very interesting niche to get in. I guess business is business is business, right? You've got, you know, sales and marketing and finance and all the, you know, the different aspects, whether it's music business or real estate or whatever it is. But I would imagine some things have kind of changed over the years, you know, the way the music industry has changed. Has your, you know, what you do for recruiting adapted at all with the changes we've seen in the music industry over these last 16 years?
Honestly, no. That's an interesting question. The function of headhunting has not really changed. Client needs to hire a CFO or mm-hmm. CMO or whatever. They come to me and I go find it. I mean, greatly simplifying it, but that's the gist of it.
Sure.
What I do is not unlike real estate. You have a homeowner that wishes to sell their house. You go find them a buyer or vice versa. You have a buyer looking to purchase and mm-hmm. you'll find that I'm the same thing. You're brokering a real estate transaction. I broker an employment transaction.
Right. It's good.
Let's dive in a little bit on the smartest people in the room. So that's basically a platform that you kind of created for industry professionals to connect and share insights. What inspired you to create that, and how do you see that evolving in the future?
That's a great question. I so appreciate telling this story. So in 2014, believe it or not, I was laying in a hospital bed, recovering from a hastily called open heart procedure.
Oh, wow.
Came out of left field. I've always been in great shape. I'm a non-smoker. My cholesterol is very low, but genes being what they are, both of my grandfathers passed of cardiac disease and passed it down to me. So here I am in the hospital, and I call up one of my music industry mentors and heroes, a good friend of mine named Jim Griffin, and I'm telling him, hey, dude, guess what happened to me? Guess where I am? And we're having this long meaning of life conversation, and then we get to some other things, and he says, you know, I just went to an event in New York City that I want you to study up on. When you get out of that hospital, check out the New York Tech Meetup. And I was like, what are you talking about? Anyway, the New York Tech Meetup in the early aughts into the teens was the most important meeting of its kind in New York City. As the name indicates, New York Tech Meetup. It was a meetup of technical professionals, which meant it was an opportunity for tech entrepreneurs to get on stage, pitch their wares, whether it was a website or a device or an app or whatever. And in doing so, they could raise capital, they could develop partnerships, seek employees, what have you. It was a very popular event. They would sell 3,000 tickets for $20 a piece to an event monthly, and it sold out, you know, just like that. It was hot ticket.
Cool.
Jim had been to it. And he said, you need to do something like that in Nashville focused on music. So I started looking up their videos on Vimeo, and I was like, that's interesting. I don't want a pitch event. I like stories. I'm on the board of TEDx Nashville. I like TED Talks.
Right.
So I don't want to be pitched something. I want to hear a story. And so while the New York Tech Meetup would have 12 speakers and give each of them 5 minutes, I turned that on its ear, and I would give 5 speakers 12 to 15 minutes to tell a story about their life, their career, and what have you. So my very first one of those was in January of 15. Mm. And I had no idea what I was doing. I recruited a really cool menu of speakers. And I'll give you an example of what I thought was cool. I'm a huge REM fan.
Were you guys fans of REM? Sure. I'm from Athens. How could I not be?
All right. Well, I guarantee you know the first speaker I invited to be my guest on the very first Who Knew was Burtis Downs.
Is that right?
You know Burtis?
I've heard his name. I don't know him personally.
So the reason why you've maybe heard of it, honestly, Burtis is the ultimate behind-the-scenes operator. If there was no Burtis, REM would have never achieved what they did. He was their lawyer and their manager. He was their social consciousness.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And Burtis, being the REM fanatic that I am, when I met Burtis about 15 years earlier, I was starstruck. Like, oh, God, you're Burtis Downs. So the very first time I was thinking about doing a Who Knew event, I was thinking, man, who could I get to that would be really interesting and cool? As the name indicates, Who Knew?
Right.
And so I called up Burtis and I had to reintroduce myself and explain where we met. And I knew he's getting ready to tell me to pack sand.
Like I had to reintroduce myself to you. We were on a panel together at Vanderbilt.
You're exactly right. I'm sorry.
No, it's good.
Anyway, I told Burtis, I said, man, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm having an event up here in January. I would be so flattered and honored if you would come up here and talk for 10 minutes about your life with REM. Yeah. Before you say no, Jim Griffin's going to do it that also. And there's this long pause on the phone. I know he's getting ready to tell me to pack sand.
Sure.
He goes, Jim's in, I'll do it. And I was like,
I love it.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I hung up the phone. I was like, Burtis Downs, are you kidding me? Nobody in this town knows anything about Burtis Downs. This is going to be fantastic. So anyway, I had Burtis and five others.
Incredible.
I sold tickets for $10 a piece on Twitter. And hoped that it would be more than just me and the speakers standing around looking at each other.
Right.
Well, 180 people came.
Love it.
Like, wow. Well, let's do that again. So in April, I had my second event. And that night's Burtis, in other words, the real name, was a guy named Steve Savoca. Mm. Now, Savoca at that time, his title was global head of music at this startup company called Spotify in New York. And I'd never met him before. And I called him out of left field and I said, hey, man, I'm having an event down here. I think it might be interesting. Would you consider coming down here and talking about what you guys are trying to do to help artists as opposed to having the press form the opinion that all you're doing is screwing them?
Right.
I said it exactly like that. And he was like, well, Tom, that was a little abrupt. I said, no, listen, man, I'm a fan. I mean, I'm walking around with the world's music in my pocket. How could I not be a fan of what you guys are doing? But in this town, dominated by songwriters and publishers, you're a bit of a four-letter word. So
how
would you like to come down here and set the record straight? Anyway, that kicked off a whole series of calls between me and Spotify Corp comms to get the idea blessed because they thought I was going to feed him to the lions. No, I'm a fan. I want you to come tell your story. Anyway, fast forward, he comes. 325 people come to that event. And at that point, it's like game on. We've got a really cool thing. Let's keep going. So over the course of the next 4.5 years, I did 38 of these.
My goodness.
They were awesome. Mostly at City Winery.
Great venue.
Oh, it's awesome. Those people are so good to me.
They are.
Anyway, it was awesome. And then all of a sudden, this thing called COVID comes into our lives.
The C word.
All bets are canceled at that point.
Right.
And here I am in April of 20, kind of licking my wounds, feeling sorry for myself that my great platform has disintegrated. And once again, my old pal Jim Griffin and I said, let's try something online. Let's do a kind of a webinar. And, you know, at that moment in time, Twitch was really hot and interesting. I was like, well, let's get a Twitch expert and why don't you interview her and let's see where it goes. Well, all right. He found the Twitch expert, Karen Allen in LA, and they had a 1-hour conversation about what is Twitch and why should the music industry care? Well, guess what? About 600 people registered for that event and attended, or most of them attended. And we're like, wow, let's try that again. To date, I've done 205 of them. They're all one-on-one conversations between two really impactful, influential music industry, either personalities or executives, and I get out of the way of it. I kick it off kind of the way Steve did a minute ago, and then I hand it off to them to chop it up for an hour, and I reap the rewards of just watching the chat and get all the pats on the back afterwards. And
lots of good stories.
Oh, my God. It's honestly the smartest thing I've ever done, and I can't tell you how much fun I get from doing them. I've got another one this week featuring two of my heroes, a guy named Dean Budnick, who's also a very prominent podcaster in the jam band world, Grateful Dead world, Fish world. And he's interviewing a guy named Donick Carey, who is a fabulous guy you've never heard of, but he was a writer on David Letterman and The Simpsons and all these other great legendary shows. And they're going to chop it up about what they do in music, because they do a lot of cool things in music.
Yeah.
And so once again, who knew? The smartest people in the room.
So good. Oh. I know, like when I, you know, lived here 30 years, was in the music business for most of it. And my neighbors were all in music, but they were in classical music, country, rock. I was in gospel music. And here we are. We would literally sit in the corner and everyone would come over. We would tell stories and share and different things. And it was all just the stories that come out and the shared experiences are incredible.
I mean, music unifies us like no other thing on earth.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that attracted me to it. I was a concert junkie.
Cool.
And I went to my first Grateful Dead concert in 1985. And when I looked around at what that was and just the community around the Grateful Dead, I was like, I want more of this.
Yeah.
How can I make my living doing this one day?
Yes.
And that's why I do what I do.
And the stories are great.
Oh.
I have to tell this one thing.
Okay.
My neighbor at the time, he toured with Ozzy, toured with all kinds of folks. And I would share my Christian music stories, and he would tell me his crazy doobie stories and whatnot. And he was always name dropping, right? Always name dropping. World famous bass player. And one day I said, let me tell you, I said, I don't want to hear another. I said, you name drop all the time. I said, I don't want to hear another story until I'm like backstage in the dressing room with a Coke in my hand with, like, I don't know, ZZ Top or Kansas. I don't know. Right. I said, cause I've heard all these stories. You know, you hear, if you live here in Nashville, you hear a million stories, right? I mean, you did.
Sure.
And so he goes, done. Within the year, I was at the arena here in Nashville. No, this is a long time ago. Literally in the arena, backstage in the dressing room, Coke in my hand. He literally places a Coke in my hand, and I'm in the dressing room with ZZ Top and Kansas.
Wow. Talk about having a vision.
And I put it up in the, I said, Leon, you can tell me any story you want. People always think the stories around Nashville are out of this world and maybe aren't true, but most of them are true.
Whatever you can see, conceive, you can believe.
Yeah,
you
it can is. Achieve. That's right.
You jumped into the music business back in 07. You just, you know, you really wanted to be a part of it. I was talking to another guy about this the other day. You know, one of the things I love about Nashville, and I find so interesting, I've lived in a few places, you know, been all over the place, but it's such a collaborative city. And I think that stems from the music industry. But like literally the people in this town are just so accommodating, so nice. Like you can pretty much get in front of anybody, talk to anybody, find a mentor. Like everybody's just so willing to help you succeed in this city. I feel like
totally,
you know, you've had some amazing people on your show, that you probably, when you first started out, you were like, I don't know if this is going to happen or not, but you know, people are just so willing to help.
Nashville's a good place to live.
Yeah.
I have a funny twist on this.
Ooh, twist away.
All the time. Tom, how do you compare New York to LA to Nashville?
Ooh, okay.
And I'm like, well, to Steve's point, Nashville is so open and accommodating.
Yeah.
In LA, I'm not going to help you, because if I help you, it's going to hurt me. Mm-hmm. So competitive. Dog eat dog. In New York, I'm not going to help you unless you pay me. Mm. In Nashville, yeah, of course I'll help you, because I know that if I help you, chances are that not only the karma will be there, but you're going to be working on a cool project and you're going to need my help one day.
Oh, yeah.
That rising tide lifting all boats is so true in the Nashville music community, and it is totally unique. It doesn't exist anywhere else.
That's interesting.
Only here.
Wait, is this where Music City Mafia came from?
Oh.
You involved in that?
I never thought of it that way.
We won't go.
You all have John Rich on at some point.
It really sounds like the mafia right now.
Go there. Oh, man.
No, there is.
Neither confirm nor deny.
Anyway, what advice would you give other, I was going to say young people, but really anybody that, you know, is looking to get into the entertainment industry and kind of find their way? What's some advice for them?
Well, be prepared to struggle. And you know, there's one problem with the music industry among many, but the one that I always counsel young people on is be careful what you seek here, because honestly, you can earn a lot more money in other fields than you will in the music industry.
True.
Partially because there's this romantic allure about being in the music industry. Everyone like your friend Leon gets to hang out with rock stars. If I get a job at Sony Records, I'm going to be hanging around with Bono and Mick Jagger. Nah, that doesn't really work that way in most cases.
Right.
So you can make a lot more money in healthcare or real estate or crypto or something else than the music business. So you've got to be in it for the right reasons, and that's passion.
That's right.
You might become wealthy. You might become famous, but there's a chance that you're going to probably make a lot less money here than you would elsewhere.
We always tell people, just get here. You know, back in the day when they would call my office, I'd be like, well, do you live here? No. Call me when you live here.
Amen.
That was always the first. It was like, call me when you live here.
Yeah. I advise young people all the time that are trying to get a job from any other music business program out of state, like at Syracuse or Georgia or elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, it's a lot easier to find a job in Nashville if you're in Nashville.
That's right.
It's easy for me to say. I don't know if your parents will support you for 6 months while you move here and live on someone's couch, but that's my advice to you. Get here. And
get here.
Yeah, that's good advice, man.
What keeps you going? What's the driving force to keep pushing, keep innovating?
One, I have a very short attention span.
Mm.
Which I'm always fascinated with things that change. You know, the music industry is very dynamic. Who knows what's going to be hot in a year, whether it's a new artist or a new platform. No one had ever heard of TikTok 5 years ago, and now it's it, right?
Yeah.
What's going to supplant it? Something will. I don't know. The second thing is I love what I do. I cannot tell you how blessed I am to be able to make a great living going to concerts. And I preach this gospel everywhere I go, to especially the young people. If you can find a job doing what you love, mm-hmm. you'll never feel like you're working a day in your life. Well, honestly, it took me till I was 40 years old to figure that out. So if I can help a 22-year-old kid figure that out, he or she is going to be a lot more successful a lot earlier in life than I was.
Well, you're a true connector of people. I mean, that's sort of the meaning of life, right?
Well, I've done it for a living.
Right.
I do it for a habit or a hobby. Yeah. I love to connect. You know, that's why I think I'm good at headhunting. Headhunting is really puzzle solving. Mm. I love games. I love playing board games.
Right.
Figuring it out. And so each search in unto itself is a puzzle. You know, I've got to figure out, well, what is this job? How am I going to sell this job? And to whom am I going to sell this mm-hmm. job? And I sometimes can come to that solution very, very quickly.
Right.
Sometimes it takes a minute to figure it out, but it's fascinating to figure it out. And then the beauty of it is once it's figured out and solved, I'm on to the next one. So there's my short attention span.
That's good.
Allows me to keep moving to the next one. It's like selling houses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Get that one going.
He keeps saying that.
I know.
He's like, bringing like back selling houses.
You know?
Oh, man.
I appreciate that.
He does.
Well, this Cord real estate thing must be pretty successful given this environment I'm sitting in. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I am the chief experience officer. So, you know, it's all about the experience. I don't sell houses. It's by his design.
We've been very blessed here in Nashville. It's a really good real estate market here in Nashville.
We're very thankful. That's right.
You've been around the industry a while now. You've met a lot of people, all walks of the industry. I'm gonna ask you to pull the crystal ball out now. So, where do you see the entertainment industry headed? And, you know, where do you see live entertainment going? Like, what's
the talking
next,
AI
next
and like goggles and
like?
Stuff? What are you
whatever,
talking?
Whatever you see for the next 10, 15 years, like, where's the industry heading?
Well, live music, as we know it, will probably never go away. I mean, you think about the Romans were entertained in their palaces by, you know, flute players. Mm-hmm. Concerts are here to stay. Where we consume them is going to continue to change. You think about how venues have evolved. That's going to change. I don't know what's going to supplant stadiums or amphitheaters, but something will. How we consume it, you know, right here, mm-hmm. think about, we're walking around with the world's music in our pockets these days. You know, I used to walk out of Dead shows in the 80s. God, I wish we could just listen to that again right now. Wouldn't it be so cool to go back and, you know, check out what we just heard? Well, that's exactly what you can do now. I mean, mm-hmm. literally, Phish puts their shows out within hours of...
It's incredible.
Yeah. And
back in the day, we used to have security posted all around the room just to make sure nobody was recording the show. It was in the contracts.
Yeah.
And now, it's like, as many as you can get, it's better.
The other thing that's going to impact it potentially negatively is all the other choices for entertainment. Hmm. You think about, you know, music used to be the only thing of its kind. Well, now we've got gaming.
Right.
We've got all the streaming platforms for video, Netflix, Amazon Prime and such. So the consumer, the end user, is bombarded with alternatives. And so how do you navigate that? That comes back to how good is the act. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm going to spend $100 or $200 or whatever it is to go to a concert, it better be $1,000
if you're going to go see Taylor.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah.
Don't be hating on Taylor.
Not hating.
Don't be hating.
I appreciate Taylor.
I love Taylor. Yeah. I think Taylor's fascinating.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We bumped chest in a pub.
Hey.
Taylor did get a lot of my money last year when my daughter and a daughter saw her twice, once with my wife. So you can do the math.
Right.
Those three tickets cost me.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so happy they could enjoy that experience together.
It's cool.
Well, and that's what it is. It's an experience. I mean, that's what that's you're right. paying for. It's not just to hear the music. I mean, you can hear the music anywhere. It kind of blows my mind that, you know, they're even talking about, like, I think Eminem did a concert on one of the big video games that everybody plays. There was an Eminem concert.
Oh, yeah. Get ready.
Yeah, which I just seems so weird to me, but I guess that's what the younger generation is.
Well,
into.
Whole meta thing, right? You're all going to be in there.
Put your product where your user is.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, gaming is three times as large as music.
Isn't that incredible?
3x. So,
and now you can play to earn, right?
Yeah.
You got kids making six figures playing video games, earning tokens.
Oh, getting college scholarship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
What a great world.
It is a great world. A good time to be alive.
Well, is there anything else you want to cover while you're here?
Didn't you want to ask him a boring question? Like, what is the impact of your
boring
education?
Question. Nah. I mean, you know, he did go to UNC and Vanderbilt.
He did.
So I would imagine that had some impact on, you know, how he handles recruiting in the industry and business
we'll ask
in general.
See your list of questions here.
So the only thing I'll say about education is you don't need one to make a living in the music industry.
That's a true statement.
And or real estate.
College degrees are basically a certification in a way. Mm-hmm. That you spent the money and the time to go get that degree, but it in no way indicates what you know or how strong you right. are or anything about it.
Yeah.
And people ask me all the time, should I go get a music business degree from either Belmont or Bandier or USC or other very expensive schools? I'm like, well, it's going to give you some great practical training and skills and experience, but
and networking.
In no way is it going to guarantee you a pathway to riches. So,
which I did love my time at Belmont. I did the music business program there after I graduated from Georgia.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend.
Well, I do. I think that a large part of the college experience that a lot of kids don't take advantage of is the networking opportunity and, you know, building relationships.
That's part of Belmont here at Music Row. They make it mandatory. You got to intern.
It's almost more important than the classes. Right. I think.
My claim to fame at Belmont was I was the first student in Belmont history who interned for himself. So,
no kidding.
Yeah.
You start your own business while you're there?
I've always been self-employed. So I did it at Georgia, and then they let me do it here at Belmont. So
what was that?
Gave myself an A.
and college credit.
Hey, got college credit.
Love it. America is wonderful.
I love it.
Well, I guess we'll call it a wrap.
I can't end of my story. Oh man, you know the root word of vanity is van. You know, so it all comes back to van somehow.
Well, if that is a wrap, let me just thank you both for having me. This is a privilege and an honor. Mm-hmm. Van, it's great to reconnect with
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely,
Steve. I can't thank you enough for this chance.
We appreciate you coming.
I love to help people, especially young people. If they get some benefit from hearing my story on your platform, then wonderful. They can connect to me on LinkedIn. Love to do what I can do to help further their careers.
Awesome. What was
perfect example of a mover and a shaker.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Gotta love it.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
See you guys next time. Well, that's a wrap on today's episode of Behind the Curtain, Nashville's Movers, Shakers,
and Tastemakers.
We hope you've been inspired by the stories of passion, perseverance, and innovation right here in Nashville.
A big thank you to our guests for sharing their journeys and to you, our listeners, for joining us. And of course, our gratitude to Accord Real Estate for making this conversation possible.
Don't forget to follow or subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform.
Thank us.
Yes, you did.
Oh, I guess I did. Well, thank us. Okay.
Like I was saying.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget to follow or subscribe on your favorite platform to catch every episode and hit that notification bell. We've got plenty more fascinating guests lined up, ready to share their insights and inspirations.
And we love hearing from you. So reach out to us with your thoughts, questions, or suggestions for who you'd like to hear from next.
Until next time, keep chasing your dreams and making your mark in Nashville.
Oh my goodness. Remember, am I talking to Casey
it's
Kasem?
The people behind the scenes that make the city shine.
I love it. Take care. See you behind the curtain.